Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. For those of you expecting our Ask the Mayor segment at this time, that's going to be at 11:45 today to accommodate everybody's schedule. So right now, Attorney General Jeff Sessions' news conference yesterday could be summed up in two words. Aw, shucks. The meeting in his office with the Russian ambassador at the height of the presidential campaign. Aw, shucks. Just an aimless chat, and who can remember such trivia anyway?
I don't recall, but most of these ambassadors are pretty gossipy, and they liked this was in the campaign season, but I don't recall any specific political discussions.
Aw, shucks. Just gossip. No specific political discussions, maybe some general ones, and who could remember such trivia? On his decision yesterday to recuse himself from the investigation of Russia and the campaign on the day after the press revealed he made a false statement under oath. Aw, shucks, folks. Just a coincidence. I was thinking of doing it today anyway.
And on Monday, we set that meeting today. So this was a day that we planned to have a final discussion about handling.
What a coincidence. Well, he does remember some things from the meeting. Can't recall any specific political conversations. But, oh, shucks, I remember that I'm a Christian and he's a communist.
I don't remember a lot of it, but I do remember saying I had gone to Russia with a church group in 1991, and he said he was not a believer himself, but he was glad to have church people come there. Indeed, I thought he was pretty much of an old-style Soviet-type ambassador.
Aw, shucks, Jeff, an atheist, right in your office. Then when pressed on Fox News last night by Tucker Carlson about reports they did discuss the campaign, it changed to, aw, shucks, not in any significant way, and again, I don't recall.
I don't recall any discussion of the campaign in any significant way. It was in no way some sort of coordinating of an effort or doing anything improper.
Oh, shucks. And on that note, we welcome our first guest today, New York Times Magazine writer Emily Bazelon, who writes about legal affairs and also teaches at Yale Law School. She has an article about Jeff Sessions in this week's magazine. He runs the Justice Department, of course, and the article is called The Department of Justification. Hi, Emily. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Oh, shucks. I guess Jeff Sessions' memory isn't all that good, is it?
Well, right. And I think you were picking up on something that Sessions has done throughout his career, which is to use a kind of soft, modulated Southern accent approach that makes him seem like more of a moderate than I think his views really show.
We now know that Jeff Sessions believes in God, but the Russian ambassador doesn't. Maybe that should be the lead.
Maybe it should. And it is, of course, telling that only that very harmless kind of cute detail emerged from this discussion when everyone's wondering whether there was anything to do with the Trump campaign that was being discussed.
Sessions first said no specific political discussions. Then later, under further questioning by a reporter, softened it to no significant political discussions, from specific to significant, when Tucker Carlson asked him. Do you find that change significant?
I think he's trying not to get himself into more trouble if it turns out there's proof that he and the Russian ambassador were talking about the campaign. You know, the more wiggle room you leave yourself at a moment like this, the better off. Maybe he doesn't know if there are other tapes of that conversation, if the Russian ambassador might be asked at some point to testify. There are reasons to want to leave the details unclear.
For you as a legal eagle, does Sessions' false answer to Al Franken's question at the confirmation hearing about meetings with the Russians leave Sessions open to perjury charges? He was under oath, but people are saying perjury is a very high bar.
Perjury is a high bar because the prosecutors have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he lied intentionally and that he, you know, absolutely understood what he was doing. And his response right now is that he, you know, didn't completely understand the context for the question, that he thought of what he was doing as a senator in meeting with the Russian ambassador was really separate from the campaign. So unless proof, hard proof emerges that he really was there in a campaign capacity and there was no way he could have imagined differently, it will be hard to prosecute him for perjury.
Emily, there's an interesting pattern here, at least a pattern of two, of Michael Flynn and now Jeff Sessions, both having discussions with Russian officials, which could both be seen as legitimate. Flynn was the incoming national security advisor. Sessions was a member of the Armed Services Committee. Could both be seen as legitimate, but then both concealing those meetings. Do you see anything to that pattern?
Yeah, I do, and I find it odd because there is nothing wrong with talking to the Russian ambassador. He's an ambassador from another country. You're a senator. On its face, that doesn't seem problematic, and so then it seems strange that Sessions wouldn't have just revealed that and explained why it was like a perfectly harmless thing to do. He also had an opportunity to make that clear in the questions that Senator Leahy asked in writing. And Leahy asked a specific question, were you talking to anyone from Russia about the campaign? And so Sessions' answer of no may be accurate, but he could have said, oh, hey, by the way, I had this meeting and there was nothing untoward about it. It's sort of why not be straightforward at that moment?
Trump and the Russian government are using the same language this morning to refer to the journalism about Sessions, a witch hunt. Is it interesting to you that Trump and the Russian government are portraying journalism the same way this morning?
Well, I think we've sort of are seeing the Trump administration pick up tactics like fake news and like witch hunt that are ways of discrediting the media. They're picking these ideas up from Russia, where Putin has used them successfully for years, and then the Russians are reflecting them back at us. It's like export-import going on.
And Russia says McCarthyism, which is very clever because real McCarthyism was a witch hunt involving anyone who might sympathize with Russia. But this is about people who might have colluded with Russia to interfere with our election. Did you notice that distortion by Russia of the meaning of McCarthyism?
Right. And I agree with you that there is a muddying of the waters here in a way in which if you've been thinking about U.S.-Russian relations for many decades, you might be skeptical of every rush to describe the Russians as this kind of evil empire because, you know, that obviously caused a lot of trouble for American communists or Americans who were interested in communism in the 50s. But and then we have to return to the immediate facts here, which is this question, you know, for which it seems like there's quite a lot of evidence that the Russians did intentionally interfere in our election, did hack the Democratic National Committee. And so what we're trying to understand now is what that interference amounted to, how it worked, and whether it directly involved anyone affiliated with the Trump campaign.
So the media narrative about this administration is usually that Steve Bannon has this dark nationalist vision and Jeff Sessions is a really nice guy, really well-liked by his Democratic colleagues in the Senate, who happens to be more conservative than them. But your article for the New York Times Magazine paints a different picture. It's a Bannon-Sessions duo driving the nationalist agenda, and Sessions is as big an ideologue as Steve Bannon. How much is that what you're describing?
I think that's right. That is what I'm describing. It's all on the record. It's just that people weren't really connecting the dots. Sessions and Bannon have a relationship that goes back a few years. They share Stephen Miller, now White House advisor, but previously a top Sessions aide. So he's like the sort of physical human embodiment of their close affiliation. And they talked a lot, and they've been open about how much they joined together in messaging, in particular to defeat comprehensive immigration reform in 2013 and 2014. And, you know, part of what I did for the story was to listen to a lot of Breitbart radio. Steve Bannon had a show, and he had Jeff Sessions on his show something like 18 times. And in that setting, Sessions was a little looser in his speech and a little harder-edged than he normally is. Usually, he's very careful to cloak what he's saying in a way that it was what you were referring to. Oh, well, he's more conservative, but he's kind of one of us among Republicans. But talking to Bannon, I would say that some of that fell away, and you can see this harder edge that's more about feeling like the country is threatened by its changing demographics.
And Trump talks about his policies as focusing on keeping Americans safe, the travel ban from specific countries and deporting immigrant criminals. That sounds simply pragmatic when they put it that way. But in your article, and I think you were starting to get to this in your last answer, you refer to what seems to be a longstanding desire to reassert the country's European and Christian heritage. You use those words with respect to Jeff Sessions. In pursuit of what, if safety is mostly a ruse? Just having more people who are like them and fewer who aren't?
Yeah, I think that is basically the goal. I think there's this idea, and they've both talked about this, that the country's best era was between the 20s and the 60s. So this was one of the more telling things that Sessions said on the radio. He talked about how there was this very high period of immigration in the beginning of the 20th century, and that was radical and unusual. And that the antidote to that was the 1924 immigration restrictions. And then he said, and then we had a good period of American life. It was good for America. There was low immigration and assimilation. And then things went wrong again in the 60s when Congress loosened the immigration restrictions. So the thing he didn't say, but to me is quite important, is that in 1924, those were immigration quotas, and they barred immigration from most of Asia and very much capped immigration among Italians and Jews and people from the Middle East and people from Africa. And so you're talking about immigration quotas that are racialized and very strict by nationality in a way that maintains white dominance and white European Christian culture in America. And that is what Jeff Sessions is hearkening back to.
Here's a question from a listener via Twitter. The listener asks, Sessions' expenses for one of the meetings paid by the campaign, not the Senate. Is that significant? Do you know that to be a fact?
I don't know that to be a fact. That would be interesting if it was true, but I don't know if that's true or not.
And listeners, we have some more guests coming up on this later in the show, including a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Democratic Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, coming up right after Emily Bazelon. So we'll put that question to him. And someone else asks, can the Russian ambassador be subpoenaed? Does he have any obligation to comply?
That would be very interesting. I have been wondering about that, too. You know, we have the Senate Intelligence Committee conducting an investigation. And one of the advantages of keeping the investigation in that committee is it's mostly happening behind closed doors. But they could have hearings. They could subpoena the Russian ambassador to have him come testify either privately or publicly. I am sure there are kind of diplomatic immunities and hurdles that have to be surmounted in order to have that kind of testimony happen. But certainly Congress could ask.
And one of the two meetings was at the Republican convention. Do you happen to know what was the Russian ambassador even doing at the Republican convention?
Well, that is a good question. And I also saw people on social media asking whether that's like a normal thing. Does the Russian ambassador usually come to the Republican convention, or only in a year where the Republican Party changed its language about Ukraine in a way that was advantageous to Russia? I'm not sure what the answer is, but it does seem a little curious.
And did he also go to the Democratic convention? We'll try to get that answer, which I don't know the answer to. And I gather you don't, right?
I have not heard that he did attend. I would be a little surprised if he did, but I'm not certain.
So before you go, what actually happens differently now as a result of Sessions' recusal?
What happens differently is that the investigation that's going on that involves the FBI, right, because we know that multiple intelligence agencies are looking into these potential ties between the Trump campaign and Russian intelligence officials, that investigation happens without Sessions' direct supervision. And so the person who is in charge will be the deputy attorney general. Right now, we have an acting person in that role. If you remember when Sally Yates was fired, the acting guy is the former U.S. attorney, I think from the Eastern District of Virginia. But fairly soon, one imagines, Sessions' choice for deputy attorney general, a man named Rod Rosenstein, I think is how you pronounce his name, he'll be confirmed. And then he would be in charge. He is also, I believe, a former U.S. attorney.
Listeners, you can read more of Emily Bazelon's deep dive into Jeff Sessions' career and views in her New York Times Magazine article, The Department of Justification. Thanks, Emily. Aw, shucks.
Aw, shucks. Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, Senator Sheldon Whitehouse from the Judiciary Committee, our next guest.